Thank you, Rabbi Yeager. I think the topic was slated to be restoring a passion for Yiddishkeit into our homes. Could be that we just heard a lecture about restoring passion for our children into our homes, which might be very directly and intimately related. We unfortunately take so much for granted that sometimes that affects the excitement, the passion, the feeling, and sometimes even our ability to withstand all the challenges which we have. There's no question that raising children is challenging. For maybe a most dramatic comment on it, the Meiri in Ovis, in Pirkei Ovis, brings an opinion that one of the 10 tests of Avraham Avinu, the 10 nisyonos of Avraham Avinu, was taking Hagar to be a wife and entering into Tzar Gidol Bonim after he had already given up hope of having children. That should vie with Akedas Yitzchok, with the Kivshan HaEsh, with the Bris Milah, the nisyonos that Avraham Avinu went through. But then after he had already thought, nope, I'm not going to have children, and he took Hagar and entered into Tzar Gidol Bonim, that vies for one of those nisyonos. The lesson, of course, is that it's not that you people need to hear that lesson and to learn that lesson. It's not so easy to raise children. And the Tzar Gidol Bonim seems to be universal and overwhelming. And therefore, sometimes we have to be able to focus on individual issues rather than the total picture of what do we do for our children? How do we assure the best possible development for our children? And deal with issue by issue, one at a time, to be able to get some clarity and maybe some practical ideas as to how to improve. And I think the issue of passion for Yiddishkeit is a very critical issue today. We find, unfortunately, today so many teenagers. We find, unfortunately, today so many adults. Sometimes, oftentimes, people that we know that are drifting from Yiddishkeit. And those that deal with these situations over the past number of years have pretty much agreed that if we had to define one common denominator, and there really are many causes, but one common phenomenon that seems to exist in all of them is a lack of passion for Yiddishkeit. The passion is gone. I remember my generation, I'm a little older than the people here, and I remember that people, Balabatim, they weren't so frum like we are today. They might not have been observing some of the basic things that would shock us, but they had a passion for Yiddishkeit. They fought for it. Their parents fought for it. They survived. Their parents survived. And they knew that this had to continue and had to be given over to the next generation. And their emotions, their feeling, their love, their dedication, their passion was something that was palpable. You could feel it. You could sense it, despite the fact that they might not have been technically as observant as we would have wanted or liked or expected them to be. But today, we seem to be lacking in that passion. There are many reasons, and some of them conjecture, some of them may be real. But I think the issue here this evening is what can we do to restore as much of that passion as possible? And I would say there's a second issue as well, and that is what can we do to assure that if and when we succeeded in reintroducing that passion for Yiddishkeit into our families, that we don't send it away after, that we don't ruin it and undermine it and compromise it after we've already achieved a certain modicum of success. I think the point to begin is with ourselves. Passion is contagious. No question about it. Too much passion is overwhelming. That's another discussion. But passion is contagious. And when our children see in us the difference between burden and privilege, the difference between schlepping and excitement, the difference between feeling so excited and so happy and so thrilled with all of the opportunities and responsibilities and difficulties that we have in the process of raising, of living and raising a frum family, that's something that inspires. That's something that sends a message that says there's more to this than rote. There's more to this than responsibility. There's certainly more to this than burden. There's feeling. There's love. There's excitement. There's something there that's so deeply meaningful that they crave to have those experiences themselves. And therefore, when we model this passion, we do wonders for our children. And we have to model it from the earliest stages of their lives. We should probably start practicing even before they're born. And we should continue it throughout. And continue it for our grandchildren as well, because everybody needs as many positive, passionate examples as possible. You know, unfortunately, as we become more religiously observant, and I hope I'm not going to be taken to task for this, sometimes, maybe even as a result of that, or as a result of a misplaced focus, the passion starts to wane. Because we ourselves become overwhelmed. I have to do this, 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 I have to do this. Why do I have to do this and this and this? Well, I don't really know. What's the benefit in it for me? Well, we don't ask such questions. Then sometimes what happens is we just end up going through the motions. So I think for ourselves, and certainly for our children, there has to be a sense of what is Yahadus all about? What are we doing here? What's the point? What's the tachlis? What's the purpose? And in a generation which is so focused, you know, philosophy is gone. Since the last 100 years, the philosophers, how many people know someone who gets a PhD in philosophy anymore? I mean, I don't know, forgive me. But it's not as common as a kid. You don't find that today. We deal in the world of psychology. We deal in the world of instant gratification. We deal in the world of happiness and fulfillment and joy and pleasure in the immediate future is too far away, present. In the immediate present. That's what we want. And the Mela, we have to see what the benefits are. You know, some might take insult to this concept and say, what are you talking about? We're loyal, we're dedicated, we're committed. If Hashem says jump, we only ask one question, how high? And I certainly don't mean to offend anybody. But the Rabbah tells us in Parshas Lech Lecha, in the end of the he has to Elias there, the benefits that we learn. And he says the following advice, which is great advice for our children and maybe even for ourselves. If you wish to convince a loved one to do something that's bitzar u'muzar, painful and strange, don't tell them what it is. First, tell them the benefits. And he says, the knowledge of the benefits will mitigate, will soften the strangeness and the pain that they're going to go through. So we say, okay, very nice. But what about us? Does that relate to us? Well, the Ralbag says, where do we learn this from? From Avram Avinu. Hashem did not tell Avram Avinu that the bris that he's entering into with him, that covenant, has anything to do with an operation. He didn't tell him a word. He says, if you enter the bris with me, you will be Zeichet Eretz Yisrael, you will have generations coming forth. That's all. And only then, after he was aware, acutely aware, of all of the benefits that he's going to have, and it seems those benefits in this world, does he give him a knife and say, this is what you're going to have to do. Even an Avram Avinu will be affected. It'll make a difference whether he gets the knife before he knows the benefits or after he knows the benefits. That's what the Ralbag teaches us. So understanding benefit is critical, critical for us. Understanding benefit excites. Understanding benefit gives us a greater sense of reason and purpose and what I'm doing, what I'm accomplishing. I feel so much better about myself when I understand what I am doing, when I am doing it, and why I'm doing it. And certainly when things get difficult, when it's challenging, when we get overwhelmed, when sometimes we feel that, I don't know what to do, I'm running out of strength. When we think about, look what there is to be gained. Look what we can have. Look what we accomplish. Look at what we will benefit. And I dare say that it's critical for our children, and I would say for ourselves as well, that those benefits are in the here and now, not in the next world. I remember as a child, I remember it vividly like today, my grandmother was burnt very severely by an exploding pressure cooker. And she lay in bed for a few months, very, very seriously burnt. And I remember hearing, as a child, "Oy in jene Welt itzay nazay gliklach," in the next world, it's going to be such a happy place. And I remember that. I don't have the patience to wait for the next world. I want to be happy and feel good and fulfilled and pleasure in this world. If that was true, I'm not going to say how many years ago, how much more so is that true today? And if we wish in our homes to create an atmosphere where there's an excitement about Yiddishkeit, it has to have to do with a sense of I'm benefiting in the here and now. And I guess the key buzzword will be, it's going to make me happy. Because today, more than anything else, everyone wants to be happy. So I think that's something, and happiness is something that we see. Happiness is contagious. They see happiness on our faces. They can, even a little baby, senses the difference between a grimace and a krechts and a broad smile. And that's what they have to see. That everything that we have to do, that all of our responsibilities and our burdens are privileges. They're sources for excitement. We feel so fulfilled when we do the things that we're supposed to be doing. That message is critical in order to restore, at any level, a certain amount of passion for Yiddishkeit in our homes. But there's another dimension to this, and it's just a further dimension of the same. And that is a word which, Baruch Hashem, I've heard it more in the last 5 years than probably in the last 25 or 30 years. But it's a little bit coming back. And that is the concept of a relationship with Hashem. Over the last 25, 30, 40 years, the best relationship with Hashem was described as, I got a great relationship with Hashem. He don't bother me, I don't bother him. That's not an exciting relationship. That's not a passionate relationship. That's not a relationship that's going to inspire our children. But when we see we have a real relationship, they see the way we daven. Do you remember the pictures of our grandmothers standing over the cholent with a tchina and begging, Rebbeinu Shalom, the cholent, so arois kum in geschmack. It happened. It happened to all of us. Maybe in different languages. But you don't see that anymore. First of all, we know already how to cook, or we don't even bother cooking, or I don't know, forgive me. But they don't see that. And when they don't see that, so something is missing. Something is missing. And they don't see the tefillah, the heartfelt tefillah. We're busy. We run. Some of us have to work. We certainly have a lot of responsibilities. So the tefillah is a little bit, but they used to see crying. They used to see tears, and not tears over tragedy, tears over life, tears over the well-being of my children, tears over the well-being of my family, tears for parnosa, tears for health, tears for everything. And that sense that, hey, there's something there. And that connection, that relationship today is hard to find. And one key element in that relationship that unfortunately today needs tremendous chizuk is bitochen. We have to be able to trust Hashem. We have to be able to rely on Hashem. We cannot show, we cannot exhibit, we should not feel worry and concern and nervousness and anxiety, which is a very normal thing to feel. I mean, we know it's very normal because the pharmaceutical companies have built a multi, after trillion, I don't know, dollar business, a trillion, let's say, per year, business just on our anxieties. And so have the therapists, and so has everyone else. But they can't see that. You see, the Ribbono Shel Olam will help. We rely on Hashem. And that's even more than tefillah. Bitochen helps. The Or HaChaim is a beautiful Or HaChaim HaKodesh, where Moshe Rabbeinu was standing and Paro is pursuing them and the Yam Suf is here and the wild animals are here and Moshe is asking Hashem to please help. What are they going to do? And Hashem says to Moshe, Vayomer Hashem Moshe, Ma Titzak Elai? Daber El Bnei Yisrael V'Yiso. What are you crying out to me? Speak to them and tell them to go into the Yam. And the Or HaChaim asks, excuse me, to whom shall I cry? Are you suggesting to the idols of Mitzrayim? What's Matitzak Eli? And he says that there was a kitrik. The sultan had the ability to interfere with their tefillas, with his tefillas at that moment because of what had happened to them in Mitzrayim. And therefore there was only one etzah, to more powerful than tefillah itself. And that was Emunah Bitochem. Let them go into the Yam Suf. Let them show that in Emunah Bitochem. Let them express it. Let them rise to the occasion. And that will save them even beyond the power of tefillah. And the power of tefillah is in the Shire. Tefillah is a machzah. Tefillah always accomplishes something. But Bitochem is even more. And Bitochem is not lip service. Oh, I'm relying on Hashem. Bitochem is a menuchas ha-nefesh. I'm tranquil. I have peace of mind. I sleep well at night. I don't worry about anything because Ribbono Shel Olam takes care of everything. We've become so active. We've become so powerful. We've become so influential that we honestly believe that we can influence the world around us. We honestly believe, until we're sorely disappointed by the realities of life, that we have far more power than we have. That we can do far more than we think we can do. And it's not true. We don't. Everything depends on Hashem. Chazal say a person can't straighten his finger up in this world unless it's so decreed. Min HaShemayim. And if our children see this sense of, we know Hashem can do anything. And the Bitochen is based upon two premises. Hashem can do anything. There's nothing that He can't do. And His love and His chesed and His mercy is endless. He's hatoiv kiloi cholu rachamecho. He's hamarachim kiloi samul chasodecho. His rachamim and His chesed is endless. And therefore, me'olam kivinu loch. We can always hope to Him. We never lose hope. We never give up. We never despair. We're relying on Him that He will help us. That reliance is the essence of a relationship with Hashem. What's the essence of a human relationship? If there's no trust in a relationship, there is no relationship. And reliance on Hashem, trust in Hashem, bitochen in Hashem, never giving up hope that Hashem can help us. Afilu cherev chodom unach al tzavorei shel odom al yimna esatzu min orachamim. Even a sword is lying at the back of his neck. Don't give up on rachamim. Hashem can help. Hashem can help. Hashem wants to help. Hashem loves us. Hashem cares for us. And giving this type of a sense of feeling in our homes, this makes all the difference. Because then Yiddishkeit, then observance of mitzvahs, then observance of halacha, then diktuk hadin, and everything that we would like to see for our children will becomes a factor of this trusting relationship. Just like I have to trust Hashem for my parnosa, just like I have to trust Hashem for my health, just like I have to trust Hashem for shiduchim, so too I trust Hashem that when He tells us to do mitzvahs, He's doing it for our good. As the Torah tells us time and time again, that it's only for our benefit. But the midah of trust, the relationship built on trust, makes the shmiras hamitzvahs a whole different level of privilege, a whole different level of thrill, because I'm trusting Hashem. This is the good. This is what's going to make my life good. This is what's going to help me. This is what's going to do everything, and everything depends on that guidance from Hashem. You know, Eliezer, the Eved Avrom, was very privileged when it came to a shidduch for Yitzchak. He was able to do something that maybe we wish we could do. He was able to elicit a sign from heaven. He said, Hashem, when I go and I come, and the girl that will say to me, Gam gmalecho ashke, so to your camels I will also water, I'll also give them to drink. She's the one who was appointed for Yitzchok. She's the basherta. Now I found the right shidduch. We wish we could have such signs. Rabbeinu Shalom, please. The one that's going to come in a blue dress, that's the one. The one that's going to... We can't do those things. We have other ways of figuring it out, but that's not the discussion for now. What would have happened had Rivka said no? She's not going to Eretz Yisrael. She refused to go. Let Yitzchok come here. You know what would have been? Ois shidduch. No shidduch. Because Yitzchok was not supposed to leave Eretz Yisrael. Even though Al-Pidin, you're allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael for learning, for parnosa, and for a shidduch. But he was on the Akedah, he was the Eulot Tmimo, it was the Fnim Mishra Sadin, he wasn't supposed to leave Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so what? So now, I have a sign from heaven that this is the right one. But I have a diktuk in halocha lifnim mishra sadin, including a promise made to Avram Avinu based on that. Yitzchak is not allowed to leave. It's a shidduch. No more shidduch. What do you mean? There was such a sign. No. But the following the halachic directive is the message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu of how to live my life, of who's the right shidduch. I have something that's stronger than a sign. It's the divine directive. Do you know, the most amazing event in all of human history took place 3,300 plus years ago at Har Sinai. But it wasn't only amazing for its public revelation. It wasn't only amazing because the Creator Himself appeared to the entire nation and told us the purpose for which we live and gave us the directives which to live by. And appointed publicly an earshot of everyone, Moshe Rabbeinu, to hear and to know and to be the official teacher and spokesman of the Torah to Klal Yisrael. That's not the only thing that was amazing about it. There was something else that was amazing about it. At that event, giving the Torah, Torah Shebichsav, and Torah Shebaal Peh to Klal Yisrael, Hashem gave us, for all generations, both public, national, and individual, the directives of how to lead a successful life, of how to know what to do, of how to discover the best, the healthiest, the most appropriate, the most beneficial, the most happiness-provoking decision of all the decisions that we're ever going to have to make. All that was encapsulized in one Kabbalah Satira, in one giving of the Torah. The directives not only of what to do halachically, but the directives of how to succeed and how to live, how to find the right shidduch, how to find the right treatment, how to find the right parnosa. Everything is in our Torah. And even though Eliezer had a sign in Hashemayim, what could be greater than that? But according to Torah, even though that was before Kabbalah Satira, but according to the halacha for him, he wasn't supposed to leave Eretz Yisrael. Okay, that takes precedence over sign. That's a greater sign. Doing what Hashem wants of us is the greatest sign, the greatest guide, the greatest directory to be able to live the good life, to reap the major, the best, the most lasting benefits for us and for our families. And our children have to know this. Our children have to feel this. This has to be part of their DNA. I'll never forget, living in Los Angeles many years ago, and when we came there, we were in the San Fernando Valley, it wasn't the ear of Ein B'Yisrael that it is today, for those of you who may know. For the most part, When we got there, the nicest thing they had to say was go home. That meant to New York. That was already being polite. You know, it was a very, you know, very distant community. And we established a high school, the yeshiva, a small token Beis Medrash post high school, just for those that couldn't leave to go to New York or to Israel, just as a, you know, service for them, because we didn't want to neglect them. And one summer, a number of our graduates were home, and they had learned already in yeshivas in New York and Israel, and they were home for the summer, about six very, very choshev bochrim. And they were discussing with me the possibility of spending the year learning in the Beis Medrash in the valley, in Los Angeles, in North Hollywood. And it was a very enticing proposition, because there would have been a tremendous chizuk for the Beis Medrash, a tremendous chizuk for the high school, a great hashpah for the whole community. Really was a unique opportunity. But they made one condition, which I found very difficult to consider. And that was, rather than just give a shiur every day, I would have to spend the 4 hours, the whole morning seder, in the Beis Medrash. This was a small group, and they would need someone to talk to and learning. And I was very hesitant. I said, I don't know. He says, I have chovos from previous years. I think it was a couple hundred thousand dollars. Today I laugh at that, but those days that was a lot of money, you know. And I have to raise another few hundred thousand dollars this year, and I have to teach in the high school as well. And I have so many responsibilities. How can I spend 4 hours a day, prime time, in the Beis Medrash? But you know, I don't like to make rash decisions. I'd like to think about it and figure out, you know, what's the direction? What is the directive? What does the director have to say to direct the decision in this matter? So I go home, and of course my source of direction was my wife. And I asked, I said, what do you say? She didn't hesitate for a moment. Omar ibn Chunya ben Hakona, third parak in Pirkei Avos. HaMekabel olav oil teiro, ma'avir mimenu oil malchus v'ol derech eretz. One who accepts the burden of teiro, then the burden of malchus, to me that meant payroll taxes, the government, they used to kill us with the payroll taxes, even those days, and derech eretz, making money. If you mekabel the old Torah, if you'll sit the morning seder, the Beis Medrash, then miraculously everything will be relieved. No, my wife said so. Reb Nachum ben Hakona said so. They both agreed on it. Okay, got a deal. Next morning, I go back to the Chevron, I say, starting with Shvedish Elul, I'm taking you up on the deal. I'll be in the Beis Medrash, the morning Seder. That night, I met a young man who tells me, he says, you know, my father was trying to reach you, he has something for you, please give him a call. Okay. Give him a call. He says, yeah, there's somebody in one of my buildings, a very sick old man, and he needs some help. And maybe you could send the yeshiva boys in there to clean up his apartment, to get him some food, to help him out. He's very sick. He can't take care of himself. And at the end, he says something like, who knows, you know, he's living in poverty, but maybe has a couple of bucks, you know, for the yeshiva. Didn't sound too realistic in its fundraising potential. I went to see him, nice man, you know, whatever. Very, very rough situation, his apartment, his whole mutz of his physical being. Kitzer, we helped him with this, with that, took care of him. He wrote a will. He passed away about a month after I met him and left the yeshiva $1 million. Remember, that's those days. That was in the early 80s. Now, that was the day, when did I meet him? Or when did I connect with him? The day that I was mekabel the old Torah. If Chazal say I'm mekabel all of old Torah, ma'avir mimenu ol malchus v'ol derech eretz, that's a directive from Har Sinai. That's a directive from the Borei Olam. That's our reality. And our entire lives and guidance for everything is to be found in the Torah. You know, it's a famous story, forgive me, but they say this priest was driving along and he sees one of his congregants with an old broken down car trying to change a flat tire. And he says to him, "What happened to you? You used to be such a wealthy man. You used to drive around with a chauffeur and a limo and what?" He says, "Oh, Father," he says, "my business is in such trouble. I don't know what to do. I'm so confused. I can't make a decision. Help me." So his pastor says to him, "Go home, open up the Bible." See, even they know that secret. "And you'll get the answer." A couple weeks later, he sees him back with the chauffeur limo and the works and everything. "What's great? What happened to you?" He says, "I took your advice. I went home and I opened up the Bible." What did it open up to? Chapter 11. I told this joke in Canada, nobody laughed, but that's because they don't have chapter 11 over there. Chapter 11 is a way many people get out of a lot of debt, and you know, they still continue living well, and all the creditors take whatever they can get. So, but it's all in the Bible. It's all there. We, of course, have the privilege, not just of the Torah Shebichtav. We don't just have to take lesson by what number of chapter opened up, and if we don't have a chapter 11, we don't know what to do. We have everything, Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebalpeh, halachas, rules. We don't know what to do. Shebal Taseh. Do nothing. It's better to err by doing nothing than to err by doing the wrong thing. We don't know what to do. Ein sofik moitzi midei vadai. We have a klal. You don't go for the doubtful and forsake the sure. Klolim, rules, regulations, directives. The Torah is far more than just burdensome halachas, which guide us in life as well, which allow us to develop closeness to Hashem, which allow us to develop human godliness that brings us closer and closer to Hashem. But it's directives for every single aspect of our living. How can we not be passionate about the Torah? And by teaching our children Torah, and by inspiring them a commitment for the Torah, and by connecting them with the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, we assure that they will take this over and this will guide them in their lives. And that makes their lives so much more meaningful. They know what they're doing. They have a real connection. Many people say, "I talk to Hashem, he doesn't answer." What do you mean he doesn't answer? He answered all the questions 3,300 years ago at Har Sinai. It's all there. Open up the Bible and you'll see. Chapter 11. All the answers are there. It's all there. And we have to feel this and we have to convey this to our children. They have to see this. This has to permeate our entire existence. We're so privileged. Ashreinu matoiv chalkeinu. It's not just a song we sing on Simchas Torah. This is what life is about. This is the life of a Jew. The life of a Jew is a privilege. These are privilege after privilege that the Bnei Olam has given to Klal Yisrael. And I feel so good about it. It warms my heart. It gives me such an excitement and passion to, Rabbeinu Shalom, what do you want from me? Because I know that everything you want from me is all for my good. You don't need me at all. You don't need anybody or anything. Everything you told us to do, everything you tell us to do, everything you guided us to do, everything you guide us now to do, is all for our benefit. Wow, what a connection I can have with the Rabbeinu Shalom. And then, when push comes to shove and difficulty strikes, I can put my trust in him. I rely on him. Look at his track record. Look what he does. Has no other interest other than helping me. Now, there's more. There's a lot more that we have to deal with our children. But we do have to have some early signs, early advice of coping with the challenges of life. Because sometimes it's the challenges, and nobody's exempt from challenges. Sometimes it's the challenges that shake people up. Oh yes, everything is wonderful, everything is good, but what about this? Look what happened. What about this? What about that? It's not enough just to say, "Well, we don't understand." Okay. Well, we don't understand, but that's not a very, it's a very true answer, but it's not a very satisfying answer. And our children have questions that we must be able to address them on some level. Now, that's a complicated discussion. It's hours of work, of talk, of thought, of insight. But just in a very, very brief sense. And that is, although I indicated my feeling that they must appreciate the benefits of Torah and mitzvahs in this world. Ultimately, without the realization of the eternity of the neshama, of the eternity of life, everything can't add up. Things just don't make sense. When Eiv, after suffering such losses, massive losses, tried to comprehend a little bit what was going on, and after 38 prokim in Perek Lamed Ches, finally Hashem responds to him and says, "Vayomer Hashem al Eiv, Eifo hayisa b'yosis the oretz? Where were you when I created the world? You can't possibly understand everything. This world started way back and goes on for an eternity. You don't have that total panorama. You're sitting here downstairs and you're seeing like the back of a needle point where all the disheveled threads are hanging. If you come upstairs, you'll see a whole different picture. You'll understand how one thing interconnects with the other. You'll understand the considerations and the machinations from the beginning of time onto eternity." Like somebody once asked one of the Hasidish Rebbeim in the Holocaust, they asked him, why does Hashem do these things? And this was a wise person. He says, I'm an old man with a long white beard. I decided many years ago I don't ask him why. Because I'm afraid if I ask him why, he's going to say, "You want to know why? Come on upstairs. I'll be happy to show it to you. And I'm not quite ready to go." But they have to have a sense there's an eternal world. They have to have a sense that the neshama is eternal. They have to have a sense, forgive me, that the only eternal relationship, every other relationship comes to an end, as we all so sadly know, except my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because that neshama lives on forever. Now, the emphasis cannot be with our youth, and I dare say not even with most of our people, on the next world. But there has to be that sense. There has to be that sense of eternity. There has to be the sense of the realization. I must share with you, it's a little bit me in Yonah de Yoima, I must share with you. I spoke about that year that we came to Los Angeles. Well, 2 days before the end of the year, no, 2 weeks before the end of the year, we had also a girls' school, so we had a Malava Malka for the girls. And I asked one of the rabbis to speak. So he told a story. He was good at telling stories. He told a story about an elderly couple that didn't have any children. They went to the Rebbe, and they got a brocha, and they had a son, and he lived for 5 years, and he passed away. She was too old to have more children. It was like, what's going on over here? They went back to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe, they asked him, what's going on? So the Rebbe explained to them. He says that this neshama that you had was a gilgul of a tzaddik yesoid olam from a previous generation hundreds of years ago. He was born as a prince to a goy, to a king in a palace, became enamored at five with his Jewish tutor, and ran away with him to become a ger tzedek. Lived a life of human perfection. When he came upstairs after Lacha Meir Ve'esrim, he was told, "Mamish, not shayek, what you achieved. But you have 5 years over there, which were not so kosher, literally." So he says, "You have to go down again. You had the privilege of hosting that holy neshama for 5 years." And his time came, and he left. Frankly, I was furious at this rabbi. I said, "I asked you to tell a story to entertain the girls at the Malava Malka. Can you please rate the entertainment value of this story?" It has value. I didn't know then how much value, but it had no entertainment value. 2 weeks later, I was on the plane with my wife to bury my 5.5-year-old son in Eretz Yisrael. All of a sudden, I turn to my wife and I say, "He was talking to us. And that story, that awareness, that neshamas come back to this world to be mashlim, to have an opportunity to complete the mission that they had and was not completely fulfilled, was an untold source of nechama. To this day, I must tell you, that is an untold source of nechama. I used to tell my wife I knew whose neshama it was, and she always said I was crazy, but that's besides the point. But it doesn't matter. But this is, now a little bit gently, our children have to eventually, I'm not talking to your toddlers about this, you know, and certainly don't tell this story for entertainment, but they have to have a sense too that there's an eternity out there. There's a Bir Yolim who has control and knowledge and organization and reasons for everything in this eternity. And sometimes when we don't understand something, we have to realize the same thing that Hashem told Eof, Eifo ha'yisa b'yosti oretz. You can't possibly understand everything because you don't see the total picture. There are a couple of other things that I would like to mention as well that I think are critical. Relationship with Hashem is really the ultimate source of passion. I mean, relationships can have passion. It's very hard to be passionate in isolation. You know, it loses its passion when there's a relationship and it's growing and it's dynamic and it's, so we add to the love, we add to the understanding, we add to the appreciation, we add to the chesed, we add to the insight. And where does the basic concept of relationship with Hashem come from? Well, the reality is, be it good news or bad, it comes from their relationship with the parents. That's the first real relationship, and that's the first and only, at least until marriageable age, relationship that can serve as somewhat as a dugma, somewhat of an example to their relationship with Hashem. Therefore, it behooves us to work very hard on that relationship. And here, without any meaning of any offense to anyone here or Asher Einenu Po Hayom, I'd just like to share another generational insight. In my day, most of us believed that our parents lived for their children. My parents, I have no doubt, just lived for their children. That's all there was. My father was very intelligent, very educated, very successful, had a very important job for the city of New York. Used to go 2-3 nights a week to work in a shoe store, taking people's dirty shoes off their feet and putting on shoes, selling shoes, just to make a couple of extra bucks to save for his children's education. This is, they lived for their children. Today, and again, present company, hopefully not included, but the refrain that I hear from the kids is, my parents live for me? I wish they'd let me live. Now, it's common, and it's usually little older children, but it's there. We have to work on that relationship. A relationship doesn't happen by osmosis. It doesn't happen by accident. It doesn't happen overnight. Don't make the mistake that I made so many times. I come home from a difficult day and I notice something in the mail and I'm looking at it, concentrating, and one of my kids is pulling on my arm and saying a terrible thing happened in school today, and I say, oh, I feel so good for you. And the other kids say, you weren't listening. You know, they said a terrible thing happened. A few minutes later, another kid is tugging over here and says, a great thing happened in school today. I wasn't going to make the same mistake, so I said, oh, I feel so bad for you. Pay attention! Listen! Empathetic listening is the most important art that there is in any formation of a relationship. Not sympathetic listening. Oh, Nebuch, I feel so sorry for you. That puts me down. That doesn't build me up. That doesn't validate me as a person. What validates me as a person is you validate my feelings. You feel my feelings. That means my feelings are real. You have elevated me. You made me feel good about myself. That, by the way, is the definition of happiness. Osher, Aleph Shinresh, the Shiris is Ishur, validation. If a person is made to feel good about themselves, they feel happy. You made me feel happy. That relationship is the most important relationship in the world. And that's how we prepare our children for a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's how we prepare our children for a relationship with friends, with teachers, with a spouse. By this, and it's secure, and we can count on it. and they see the attention. We're so busy. We have so many things to do. We go out to lectures, and tonight's not a regular parenting one that we leave our children to go out. Tonight is a very special one, and it's a thrill to see so many people here. And it's a schus that so many people should be here. But the truth of the matter is we're very busy. But we have to have time. And quality time is not enough. Forget what the books tell you. You need quality time and quantity time. We need both. They need together and they need individually. The Shabbos table is the most amazing thing when it comes to a family bonding. But we could lose the relationship at the Shabbos table if we're too demanding. If the table isn't geared to the happiness, participation, enjoyment, and excitement of our children. And if they really want to go away and play a little bit and we refuse to let them, then we may be doing more to hurt that relationship than to help that relationship. And if we wish that passion that we bring into our homes and that we want to give over and inspire our children with should remain, we have to be so careful not to do anything to turn them away, to give that constant feeling that we're there for them, that we love them, that we love them. They do not know. They do not know that we love them. And by the way, the love you and hang up the phone as quickly as you can doesn't do it for anybody. That's not what it's about. In fact, sometimes saying it can be worse than not saying it. It's about showing it. It's about modeling it. It's about them feeling it. It's about them sensing, about them seeing how, you know, the famous story is told. It's really a chinuch story, but it could help parents too. Again, all these stories may or may not have happened. My stories I know happened. But other than that, we can't take responsibility. But this kid was a holy terror. Holy terror. I mean, I guess that's not too bad a word. A holy terror. Okay? And every day the same story. He's disrupting the class, disrupting the lesson, disrupting the teacher. Sent to the principal. The principal talks to him, goes back to the class. The next day it's the same thing. This went on months and months and months and months and months. Until finally one day before Pesach, he goes, comes back from Pesach to the end of the year. A holy angel. My mission angel. Nobody knew what happened. They were shocked. Finally, one teacher asked the principal, "What did you do different?" The principal says, "I'm in shock too. I have no idea. I did the same thing I always do." So the principal calls the kid in and says, "What was the difference? Every day it's the same speech. You know the speech by heart. I've been making it for 8 months, 6 months." So the kid says, "You were in the middle of talking to me. The secretary came in and said, there's a very important person who must speak with you right now. And you answered, I'm speaking to the most important person in the world. I cannot interrupt." End of the story. We have to make our children feel that way. We have to elevate them. If we make them feel the most important person in the world, in the context of a home that's passionate about Yiddishkeit, they ain't going anyplace, excuse my English. Maybe today you're allowed to say that too. Today you're allowed to do anything, so you're probably allowed to speak like that too. But they're not going anyplace. They're going to be happy. You're validating them. You're uplifting them. And when they sense that we live a life of purpose, that we know the purpose for which we were created, because the Creator Himself has revealed that purpose to us at our Sinai, we're not Nebuch like the world out there who reads about this guy called Darwin and thinks that we're all a bunch of accidents. And since we're all a bunch of accidents, we have no purpose. Since we have no purpose, we can't feel good about ourselves, because who could feel good about him or himself if they have no purpose in living? And that's all. And this can all change. And we know they share with them. Let them know. Let them know how excited and how privileged we feel to be able to have such a purpose. These are some ideas that I think, hopefully, Be'ezus Hashem, might be helpful. But after everything is said and done, we can't expect it to be easy. Avraham Avinu's Tzar Gidol Bona might have been one of his 10 Nisyonos. And ultimately, we have to pray to Hashem. We have to daven every day, if not all day long, for the welfare, for the development, for the security, for the inspiration, for the commitment, for the happiness of our children. And there's Hashem. We can and we should. And with trust in Hashem, we will be zeicha to be able to see a generation who once again reflects the passion that existed in the hearts of their grandparents and great-grandparents and generations previous. And what more can we ask? When we will have that passion in our home, when our children will catch that passion, their commitment to Yiddishkeit, their growth in learning, their growth in Shmiras HaMitzvahs, their growth in Midas, and their whole future will be affected in a very, very positive way. Hashem should help that. We should be zeicha to see those results, to implement some of these ideas, and to see nachas from our children in the best of health, in the fullness of happiness and passion for the Yiddishkeit. Ken Yehi Rotzeh.